And quick one before we start, this podcast was recorded directly after the race, therefore before Lewis and Charles' disqualification was announced. Annoying, but there you go.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Last Lap Podcast post-COTA, post-Austin Grand Prix. What a tense, thought-provoking Grand Prix it was. I had to use every part of my brain, I think, during that one.
It was.
Yeah, an underpaid, underfunded brain.
You know what? It helped having today's two guests on who
really did
bring the knowledge themselves. Baxty from Baxty BF1. And Cam from Cameron F1 as well. Boys, links to these two, of course, down in the description. If you are watching on YouTube, if not, Cameron F1 on Twitter. Baxty B on Twitter?
Yeah, Baxty B on Twitter, yeah.
Bosh, check them out. Boys, thank you very much for joining us for the pod as well. It's 10:05. It's not actually too late.
Yeah, I thought it'd be late.
Past my bedtime. Yeah.
Way past my bedtime. Grey beard. Yeah. You younger just there.
No, I'll be up for another
Trust me. Hannah keeps pointing out the little greys that are coming in on the side. So I don't mind going grey. I just don't want to lose it. Right.
You know, going grey is cold. I don't mind. Go grey. I'd go grey now.
I'm happy. Well, I mean, I feel like I could see you two going grey as this race panned out towards the end.
That's cold. That's
with Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton slowly drawing in Max, close but no cigar. Question I want to ask, boys, both as, you know, Lewis Hamilton, big Lewis Hamilton fans, of course. Did Mercedes throw away the win? What? We're going in.
Yeah, we're going to cross over live to Cameron for our response on that one.
He was, I think, closest probably 1.5, maybe a shed below 1.5 seconds and two pit stops during the race, Mercedes, pick up shares. Two pit stops during the race. What lost time are we talking? There was a 3.3 for Lewis.
Yeah. There was a slow one for Max, it's worth knowing, but I think the overall time loss we were saying just before,
about a second
and a half, really, yeah.
And that's, I know what, you know, people who maybe have only got into F1 recently are thinking, like, that's not even that much, but when it's happening so consistently in Mercedes pit stops, that is what it costs you, even though it's a small error.
And you know, chaps, what I don't want to do as we start to diagnose for the ills of Mercedes is get muddied in the quantum. The number's irrelevant, chaps. There was a number that jeopardized Lewis Hamilton's chances, right? And historically, over the past 12, 16, 18, 24 months, as soon as Lewis Hamilton goes in the pits, there is always an adverse variance when compared to McLaren and when compared to Red Bull and how they conduct their pit stops. And when it's so close like this today, As a Lewis Hamilton fan, a dude that's been following this chap since GP2 2006, 2007, when he came into F1, that's fucking infuriating, chaps. Not to know, I'm not going to debate whether Lewis Hamilton could have won, because that's Fugazi, fool's gold, right? Fairy dust, who knows? The bottom line is, though, chaps, but for those shitty Mercedes pit stops, he would have been closer.
Would have had a chance.
True or false? Yeah. He would have been closer.
Don't lie.
And that's just bloody... Lewis Hamilton is 7.5-time champion, all that good stuff. And that for me, chaps, when I watch that race, it breaks my... You see me guys struggling and my eyes are...
What was like a key point that I'm now thinking back to when we were like literally doing the live show was, I think I said, I think I asked the question of like, what strategy are we looking at here for Lewis? And your response was just like, the less pit stops, the better. Yeah. And this was before this had even happened. I don't think anyone had even pitted at this stage. And it's just so like, again, it's not, if it was just one pit stop error and it had cost him the race today, it's like, well, it happens. Long day, but you know, that's just how Formula One is. But when it's operationally happening every Grand Prix, that's when it's not excusable.
Well, last time we had you on, Cam, You had your little rant about Mercedes pit stops, and we were talking about, you know, what's the excuse? Because, you know, even look at Ferrari. Ferrari's pit stops have significantly improved this year.
This is Ferrari.
Compared to recent. But, I mean, actually, this has been a problem for a while. Like, why? Mercedes have no excuse to not be operationally sound. They have all the facilities. They've yet... Is it just a factor of complacency for being so good for so long? Because I don't think Mercedes operationally have had to excel like other teams. Like in this instance, if Mercedes did excel, they could have maybe won this race. they've been in Red Bull's position for so long where they can, Red Bull had a 3.3, I think, for Max, and they still won the race because it's not the end of the world. But Mercedes, surely now, like, they, there has to be some, Toto needs to be, I don't know, looking in the mirror, because this is not good.
Yeah, it's so infuriating to watch. I mean, I always get reminded of this one double stack that Mercedes did, I think back in 2019, where they literally perfectly executed it. And even when they first came into the sport as Mercedes in 2010, 2011, they were the best at pit stops, even ahead of Red Bull. Mm. And for years, they were on it. And ever since sort of 2020, 2021, that's when the standards have started to slip. If you're going to challenge Red Bull, you've got to up it. You've got to be so good at every single facet of the game. You've got the drivers, great. You're building a better car, great. But Red Bull will kill you in the pit stops like they did today, and they will kill you on strategy. Because I also thought the strategy today wasn't good. I think they left Lewis out a couple of laps too late if they were going to do a two-stop. And it compromised him to both Lando and Max and allowed them to build a bit of an advantage on him, particularly Max in by the end of the race, it showed. But yeah, the pit stops are a major issue. There's been debates in the fan community about this for ages. You know, are pit stops an issue? Today has showed proof positive.
They are. I mean, they.
Yeah. Surely no.
There's not a conversation. They are. Yeah. They clearly are.
Yeah. No one can.
They're always above 3 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, you look every at the time. Look at the numbers. Look at the, like, you know, DHL track these things, don't they? Have the fastest lap thing, and Mercedes are almost never up there.
Yeah. No way.
Oh, I might actually. See what the table.
Sub 2.5 is the standard.
You don't even need to check it, Niren. I'm telling you, like, nowhere all the bloody time. Here's what I will say, though. I don't want to. This rapidly becomes a Man United conversation, yeah, when we start to reflect on, like, former glories and back in the day when they did the double stack and they were good and whatever. But F1, A, is a sport told in tenths. Fine margins matter, right? Split seconds are all important. We've seen it at Abu Dhabi. Countless races have been decided by milliseconds. That always happens. So what I'm not going to do as a Lewis Hamilton fan is do the bloody back in my day. No. F1 is, what have you done for me lately? Janet Jackson, each and every single time. What have you done for me lately? And lately, for the past 18, 24 months, this has been going on. We sat, like, Niren, you said it. We knew. Put my mortgage and my wife and my son on the table. We knew that those Mercedes pit stops were going to be SH1T. That's why I'm telling you, I don't want, the less time they spend in there, the better.
Yeah.
Because you just know they're going to drop the ball again and again and again. And it's not, I don't want to do the AFTV troops thing and smash them every time, because they're a brilliant team, 8-time constructors, all that good stuff. But my worry is there are bigger fires to fight. If framing the conversation as far as 24, which I know we're going to get onto, and F1 fans around the world want there to be more competition. We don't want one team and one driver dominating the sport. It's not good for anyone, for viewing figures.
Not good for any sport.
It's not good, bruv. So with that in mind, yeah, Mercedes need to pull their finger out. They have bigger fires to fight than just the noddy bloody pit stops. My worry, Tom O'Neill and Baxter, is if they can't sort out the pit stops, how are they going to sort out the bloody aero efficiency? How are they going to bridge that gap? Because those are harder things to do, Tomo.
But they're very different things to do. I think having a top quality race team, clearly I think Mercedes are leaving something. Like, you can see the standards that Red Bull have set for a long time. This wasn't their best weekend by any stretch in terms of pit stop time. You look at the McLaren step forward, Ferrari step forward. The fact that we're talking with a race with no safety cars, that Lewis was within a couple of seconds at the end of a race win of Max Verstappen. Yes, Max potentially had brake issues, or he just wasn't happy with the brakes in some way, shape or form. But either way, right, this is this sport. This happens, right? This is part of the sport. No one has 100% reliability throughout the course of a season. You get these opportunities. Science had an opportunity in Singapore when the Red Bulls were nowhere, and you capitalize on it. The fact that we're even able to talk about this when there's no safety cars to potentially jump up, you know, 6, 7, 8 seconds.
100.
That should be credited to Mercedes, that they are at least making some. I mean, you know, I predicted Hamilton race win, which was a stretch, but
I mean, it wasn't. You were second and a half.
No, and you know, I was very much like, that's only going to happen if Max is starting sixth, and he still came through to win. Let's not beat around the bush. This was still a victory from sixth to first from Max Verstappen, which is significant. But surely, Baxter, the race, the engineering side, you've got Allison's back in the team. Like, the race team might need a bit of work, but from an engineering point of view, Mercedes, you know, we've seen how much Aston Martin have struggled to develop their car throughout the season, but that's Mercedes' thing. They are known for being good at developing a car mid-season.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the big positive to take from this weekend, is the new floor has worked. We've seen other teams really struggle with Aston and Haas just not getting on top of it. And I think what Mercedes are doing, and I think only McLaren can say that they're as good as this, is that they are understanding their concept. Yeah, Mercedes are using a mule car right now because they're stuck in this halfway house. That's the cost cap at play. Yeah, they can't homologate a new chassis. So, and they, if, because it would cost too much money and everything else. So I think what they need to be able to do is learn everything they can now, take the big points and potential wins where they can. And, but obviously today they let that one drop. But yeah, I'm positive on the engineering side. Allison has come in and just galvanized that team. If there's one guy that can take it to Adrian Newey, I think it's James Allison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Them two are like the... Mm.
For sure.
They are
the goats.
They're the Messi, the Ronaldo.
The daddies in this game. Here's what I'll say to that, and I agree with everything that Baxi's just said. But in 2024, yeah, Max, the driver that Max is becoming, the team that Red Bull are becoming, if you're going to beat them, you're going to need stuff, right? Mm. And what you can't afford to do is make unforced errors. Hence why, even with the line of travel of Mercedes' design philosophy, and that's brilliant news for all of F1 fans all around the world, absolutely it is. But you can't afford unforced errors against the behemoth that Max Verstappen and Adrian Newey are becoming as a pair. You can't afford to keep making those. So when, fingers crossed, touch wood, next year, it's close amongst more than just Max Verstappen. And say there's a couple guys in there. The one that will win, the one that triumphs, will be the one that makes most mistakes. So Mercedes, in addition to their design philosophy, need to fix for the bloody unforced errors. Otherwise, we don't have a flipping conversation. Max and Red Bull are going to walk away with it again next year and the next, until somebody fixes for those more broadly. That's my concern.
Yeah, because if we're looking ahead to 24, the problem for Mercedes, right, you look at Red Bull, they're setting the standard. You've got Max Verstappen incredibly comfortable in this car, driving out of his skin, right? Three-time world champion in a team where he's the clear number one, best race team, I would say, operationally.
100.
Adrian Newey at the helm, aero god, Bosch. Mercedes have a subpar race team, I think. Like, we've seen that. It's clear as day, right? I think from an engineering point of view, I think they can do it. I think Allison can you know, spearhead that team and the development that they're, how close they were this weekend. I believe in that side. But then also you've got two drivers who, obviously we didn't see it this weekend, but have tripped over each other far too many times. Mm-hmm. This season.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a point. Do we even want, like, as a Mercedes fan, would you even want your team to actually be in a position where all those unforced errors are out of the way, and you know, you're actually, because George and Lewis will just trip over each other.
But how do you two feel about that? Because two more years you've got that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want it to get to Nico and Lewis levels, because I think that would just be unsustainable. Yeah, you could get away with that because they had no competition for 3 years. But you know, if you're going up against Red Bull, they're going to have to quickly make a decision. We saw that in 2017-18 with Ferrari, and then in 21 that Lewis very quickly established himself as the play for the championship, and that meant Bottas had to suffer a little, well, had give up race wins in Russia and everything else. So I think Mercedes will make a decision one way or the other, and I don't think they will automatically side Lewis. I think they will side the driver who has done better after the first few races of a season, and the other one will have to support.
Do you think?
And that's chaos, Baxter.
Well, I mean, that's the Mercedes philosophy.
Yeah, no, it is, but I just don't think that will work with either driver.
That's chaos, Baxter.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Lewis would probably
It is what they'll do.
Lewis will probably, you'd think, would be the better driver. He's showing this season now that they've got a more solidified concept. He's starting to get on top of it a lot more. He's kind of getting back to the Lewis we saw sort of 2020, 2021, that kind of competitive monster that he is. And George is struggling a bit now because I think he's, the pressure of being Lewis's teammate is starting to not get to him altogether, but he's just feeling it a little bit more than he has done previously. Last year was a free hit for him because the car was so bad. Whereas this year, now he's expected to deliver. He's a race winner. That comes with a different pressure.
Yeah.
Tomo, you know what? You spoke to it, and I think this loops the circle very nicely. You spoke to it earlier about Mercedes' inability to adapt to their new ranking, as far as them not being the most dominant team that they were with the W11 all through 2014 to 2020, right? And I think what we're talking about now is a symptom of that. There is a way that you can afford to move as a dominant team. You can afford to make a 3.5 second pit stop, because ultimately that will be of no consequence, because your W11 is far down the road. The only person that's going to beat Lewis Hamilton is Valtteri Bottas in the bloody of a car. But now it's not that. You guys remember Red Bull. They played, even in 2021, right, when they had equal-ish machinery, their ability to know when to play a joker to pull off a rogue strategy, because there was no downside, right? Their ability to identify those circumstances and just play the joker without hesitation, whether that's strategically or engineering wise, was unparalleled. But they understood their portion. They got the assignment as far as where they were in the grid and the critical path analysis that was requisite to getting their victory. Mercedes don't do that. They're still moving like this is 2014, bruv, and it's not. You need to move differently and understand that the game has changed.
Yeah.
And there's a different, in order to get the W, there's a different set of CPAs, right? There's a different set of steps. Lest they understand that, they're never ever going to defeat this Red Bull team. And that's my concern.
Yeah, that'll be their Achilles heel, because Red Bull were delivering in every way. That's the thing. There's not like a clear and obvious weakness outside of the... Yeah, all right, Max had issues. Like, you have to expect a degree, but there's not a consistent... Like, every type of track, they're quick. Singapore, that happens. Like, that's happened to Mercedes in the past where they've struggled at Singapore.
Yeah,
like,
it's one track and it's just certain, you know...
Yeah.
Perfect storm.
It's one of them. So it is going to take a lot. But again, as long as it's close in 24... Will Max win in 24? Probably. Like, everything seems to be aligned in that direction. But as long as we get more races like we had today, Max still won. And I'm happy with that.
I mean,
but it still remains to be seen who will be his teammate, because that gap, Lewis to Checo, which has been talked a lot about, if Checo loses P2, is his seat up for more scrutiny? Yeah. Certainly, from an outside point of view, that gap's gone down from 30 to 19 points.
I'm sorry. I know we have spoken. I know we have spoken about Checo potentially more than any other topic, maybe in this podcast's history.
Yeah,
but guys,
the lights are brighter at the top.
If Sergio Perez does not finish second in that car, that might be one of the biggest crimes we've ever seen in Formula One. This car is crazy. It's not the most dominant car ever, especially driven by Max.
And especially considering there's not been a consistent number two either.
Yeah, so this is what we were saying earlier. It's like, if it was like last season, where it was very much sort of Ferrari for the most part of the season, were the ones challenging Red Bull, and you're not finishing second in the championship, even though your car's better. Not great, but I understand it. You know, if you're not getting along with the car. There has not been a consistent second best team at all this season.
Mercedes has been consistent like third best team.
Yeah.
Occasionally second.
Yeah. But it's then everyone around them. You've had Aston Martin up there. Alonso was third in the championship for fucking ages. McLaren are now there.
Ferrari have been there. We're nowhere
at the start of the season. Yeah. Ferrari have been all over the place, bouncing in and out. So to be finishing, it's literally third in a two-horse race. That's what it is.
This is hard.
You've been quite kind to Checo, and I get it, right? He's under a lot of pressure. He's a lot of eyeballs. He's in this. Max is making this car. Max in this car is one of the most dominant partnerships since 92 Williams, 2004 Ferrari, 2013 Red Bull, right? And he is nowhere near, and there's... But the fact there's not a consistent number two, you know, when Webber didn't finish second in 2013, because Alonso was in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
That was a consistent, he was consistently up there taking podiums and all. Yeah. Like, this is, it's painful, because Checo's just, this is not going to stop unless he either leaves the team or his performance is significantly improved. This is his third season at that team. Like, Albon got a year and a half. Gasly got half a year. This is going to be three full seasons of that team. Mm. And right now, this is the biggest gap to Max that it's ever been. This wasn't a terrible race. He made progress. He still only progressed to fifth, and Max only won by a second and a half. So it wasn't a dominant Red Bull track in these conditions on Sunday, but come on.
Techie.
Yeah.
I hear you, Tomo. I hear you.
On a human level, I get it, but like, this is Formula One.
I hear you. As far as Checo Perez's story is concerned, the narrative there for me isn't necessarily the what's as much as the how's and the why's, right? And I don't know, have you guys ever driven, you're front wheel drive, right? The car that you drive, front wheel drive. Have you ever jumped in a rear wheel drive car and tried to drive it in anger? Tomo, you know, it's just different, right? The first time you get in there, you're just waiting to stack the car. Like, it's just different because it's new and it doesn't speak to the handling dynamic that you've learned. It's completely different the way it steps
out. My uncle's
out.
M3 at Knockhill.
Bro, E46.
He was scared.
E46.
It was like,
E92. E46, E92. Cheeky entanglements with lampposts both times.
I didn't go that far. See, I kept it out of the wall.
Well,
cap,
there's no lamppost at Knockhill, to be fair. I'd be concerned if you hit a lamppost at Knockhill.
I only say that to say that it's really difficult, even at the upper echelons of motorsport. If you jump behind the car, regardless of how brilliant that car is, if it doesn't speak to the way that you like to interact with a car, it's always going to be bloody difficult. Even if you're Jim Clark or Fangio or Lou, it doesn't matter how good you are. If the handling dynamics of the car don't speak to your driving skill, the way that you like to interact with a car, whether that's understeer as per Checo, then you're never going to gel or mold with that vehicle.
Which is similar to what happens to Ricciardo at McLaren.
I was just about to say that same thing, bruv. It's the perfect example because the way Danny loves to be confident on the brakes, didn't get that confidence, unstable on turning at the apex. Danny Ricciardo, all of a sudden, he's a brilliant driver, but he became a schmuck.
Your point, get it completely. So what's going to change? Like, he will just continue to be miles off because this Red Bull's not all of a sudden going to be, oh, actually, it's going to be much more suited to Checo's start.
Agreed.
Like, the reason Checo was fighting at the front and winning races at the start of the year was because Max hadn't got on top of it. He made a breakthrough in Baku and all of a sudden he's just steamrolling in Miami.
There has to be a degree of something else, though, because at the very least, even then, obviously Sergio was getting results, but he was, like, still up there. He's not even up there at the moment.
And I think that's where the confidence
hit of like, oh shit, I've just started getting battered. Now I've got to overdrive the car. And we're seeing him make those mistakes because he's overdriving.
I have a feeling, I said it before, right? I've had a feeling for the longest time that Checo's fallen victim of the pressures around Red Bull, Helmut Marko's very dodgy xenophobic comments, that all that stuff. As a collective, as a package, kind of helped him, right? Yeah. But Crofty said it the other day. I think that there is a degree of responsibility that Checo Perez has got to take for this stuff. Again, he's rocked up. Has he been match fit for the past 4 to 6 months? But he's rocked up at COTA and he looks already a lot more match fit and ready to go, right? You can see in his face, he's more drawn and he's lost weight and he's ready to go. He's been in the sim for 3 days. Bloody Max Verstappen, when he finishes the race, he's going to jump straight on the sim. So already, you see, I think there's a... What I'm not saying, Tomo, is that Checo Perez is going to rock up race one of 2024 and demolish Max Verstappen. But it's a theory of relative... It's relative.
Could you imagine?
Relatively though, right? He can improve.
But that's not what... That's not what Red Bull are asking, are they?
Bang.
That's not what they want. Like, is this gap... Because there is a clear one too.
Yep.
Red Bull don't have to worry about the issue that Mercedes potentially might have if they're fighting for a championship and that's who they're. Ferrari maybe have that issue because science is sometimes close. Maybe McLaren, obviously Lando is still clear of Piastri. But like, is this actually a problem for Red Bull, do you think?
It will be in a championship fight. We saw in 21 that, yes, Checo had his moments where he was the perfect number two for Max. You know, Abu Dhabi, Turkey as well. But... actually, at points, he could be just miles behind Lewis and not helping him. And then in a tight constructors fight as well, Valtteri was the difference maker in that because he was able to get more out of the car and perform better than Checo did.
His qualifying record was so good that he was always up there to then just finish second.
So Checo was a way better number two to Max in 21 than Valtteri was to Lewis.
Absolutely.
Valtteri was nowhere.
But I think for Red Bull, they want somebody that is going to support Max. They've had the two alphas in the car. They had the problems with Seb and Mark in 2010 when they were both in the hunt for the championship and you know potentially could have cost each other the championship. Had strategy not gone wrong in Abu Dhabi, but yeah, it, for Red Bull, it's clear they want somebody that can guarantee P2 and not be sort of scrapping around and potentially costing them a Constructors' Championship, even if Max does win the drivers.
The qualifying head-to-head just came up on the screen there between Verstappen and Perez. It was 16-2.
Destruction.
Fucking hell, I didn't know it was that bad.
And the gap's like about half a second, I think. Yep. It's maybe a bit more than half a second.
A second so much these days, though.
That's chaos, bro.
That's mental. You could get away with being half a second.
No, it's bad. Like it's bad, Niren.
You can't now. That's it's bad, crazy.
But you can't. Your guy Albon talked about this—the handling dynamic that Max Verstappen likes, right?
Yeah,
On the nose.
You've got to turn down your steering sensitivity on the RB19. It's twitchy, man. It's like it's the front like end is bonkers. All over the place. So, a man in Checo Perez that loves understeer, that's all about the rear end, like the head that the RAS cass is feathering the throttle. That's his strength, right? In addition to managing tire deg. Mm. That just doesn't suit him. You're never going to get the best out of Checo Perez in that car, sadly.
Yeah, and again, Red Bull don't need the best out of Checo Perez, but I would...
They need someone to collect points.
But do
That's
they?
That's it.
Well, it depends. Actually made the point, right? That depends. If the rest catch, Peter Windsor made the bloody point. Chi said that Checo Perez is the perfect number two for Max Verstappen. Just get out of the way, bro. Just but get out of the way and let
he's
him
the
away.
He's the perfect number two in the context of Max being so clear this year.
Yeah.
Like this season, they've already won the constructors. They've already won the drivers with races to go. You can make that argument. 100. But if you're being, if you're trying to think proactively to next season and assuming that McLaren and Mercedes and maybe Ferrari and maybe Aston Martin, who knows, will be closer. You know, if you want to win a Constructors, and then it comes down to how important is a Constructors title? Because Max is a clear number one, best race team, best car, you know, great aero, like great development still. They've got ATR punt, but everyone's going towards Red Bull now. So it's like, how important is it for, I mean, Ricciardo did okay. Like he's in an AlphaTauri. Tsunoda did okay. It doesn't seem like Tsunoda's going to get there. For me, I still, like, if I had to say it today, I still think Ricciardo will be in that seat in 24.
Oh, race 124?
Yeah.
Next year.
Do you remember the things Christian Horner was saying about Pierre Gasly? Days before they dropped him.
Yeah.
We have no plans on replacing Pierre, blah, blah, blah.
It's the classic football thing, isn't it?
If he loses P2, he's not in that seat in 24. Sorry. I've said that consistently. That's going to happen. It's 19 points now.
Yeah.
And Lewis's momentum is...
Where else are we going? Mexico next.
Brazil,
pressure
Vegas.
Is on... Realistically, for Sergio in Mexico, will that make it worse for him, do you think?
Or? Checo always goes well at Mexico. Home crowd boost. I mean, Mantle always said it was you gain a second at home. Yeah. So Checo will be much better in Mexico. Will be much better, but
should be.
The pressure for him will be Brazil, which is Lewis's second home track these days.
True.
Mm-hmm. Vegas is the great unknown. And Abu Dhabi, Checo's all right round Abu Dhabi. He's not great. He will
defensively is all
any right. Yeah. Any 90-degree corners. He's cushy.
Bring back Zocchi.
Yeah, 100%. That's who Checo Perez is, and that's the paradox that's posed by Checo.
And you know, Daniel Ricciardo has come out and said, "I'm not going to try and change my style to adapt to a car. The car needs to come to me." He's kind of come out and said that because that's what he was doing. He was chasing that McLaren because he just couldn't drive that car the way it needed to be driven, the way Lando could drive it, the way Oscar's been able to drive it because he's younger and he's more less set in his ways, I imagine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still... Who's in it? 24? Red Bull? Come on.
Yuki Tsunoda.
Oh my God. Yuki.
He got the fucking fastest lap point today.
You know what? He did.
Get him in that Red Bull.
He did. He delivered. Baxter.
I'm going to say Checo still, I think.
Still think Checo?
Yep.
Cam. I think Alex out. No, I don't know. I
don't tease. Please no.
Don't tease.
Please no.
No.
I'd rather the odd point than just go through that again. Because it's not pleasant, right? I know there's a lot of Checo fans out there and it's tough. Like watching your driver you believe in get
pain
dicked on by a
It's also probably even, it's arguably worse for Checo fans because you've actually had the good times.
Like, he's a proven good driver in Formula rubbish. One.
He's
not a bad driver, obviously.
He's no
like,
mug.
He's
no.
Underperforming Sauber when he first joined F1. He almost won a race against Fernando Alonso in Malaysia.
He's no mug. You know. But I challenge anyone.
The ability of a human being to extract pace from a machine.
Thank you.
It's so nuanced.
I was just about to say, anybody that hasn't ever driven a rear-wheel drive car, jump in one and try and drive it.
There's so many great... You compare what? Vettel 2013 to Vettel 2020.
Mate.
Like, the ability to extract peak performance from those cars relative from the same human being.
Yeah. Completely different
Vettel
drive.
2020 was a crazy time, man.
Oh, man.
That was one of like the moments of like recent Formula One history, I think, was going on Twitter every day and just knowing that you were going to get content. Just daily.
Yeah.
Vinales.
Different driver. What a throwback that was.
Well, the red B. Every time I see the red B on Twitter.
Right, let's get our noggins in gear. F1 trivia time. The Santander Lap Zero quiz is almost over, but not quite. Let's do it.
All right, first question. Mm-hmm. The lap record around Austin, 136.1. Who is it held by? Is it A, Lewis Hamilton? Is it B, Charles Leclerc?
Oh.
Or is it C, Valtteri Bottas?
See, this is actually a trick question. Because after today, it's actually Yuki Tsunoda. Because he's going to slap right in.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hey, look, listen. Hey, it could be. It could be, mate.
Come on.
2 points on the board. Oh. Come on, that's what we love to see.
You know what?
There's going to be 0 points on this board, though. That's what I'm saying, because I don't know.
Right, I'm locking mine in.
Sorry, can I get a repeat of the options, please?
No, you may not.
Oh, shit.
Is it A, Lewis, B, Charles, C, Valtteri?
I did a Niren and wrote a number.
That was actually the right number last time. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It wasn't even an option, but it was the answer.
Oh, right.
Okay, mine's done.
Right, okay, I think I've actually answered a question like normally this time, which is again a bonus.
That just make sure it's not Plan Z.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Ferrari sentence. Yeah, exactly.
I'll believe it when I see it. Right.
Hang on.
Shadow on
this. I'm back in Tomo, but remember last time you did a...
Mate,
there was a question last time, Tomo.
I overthought it. That's the problem.
Bloody Nora.
There's too much.
I've arguably underthought it this time. So,
should we reveal in 3, 2, 1? I've gone C.
I have gone A.
I could see
very
Valtteri.
Large, but also like B and C just next to it as well, just to cover all bases.
Well, chat.
No, it's A. It's A.
That's
no good because both of you are incorrect.
Oh, it's Charles.
It is indeed Charles Leclerc.
Should have known Santander, Ferrari.
Oh, yeah. We've not made the connection there.
Right.
Sorry, we've not had our brand heads on there for a second. It's because we were saying Lewis is such a demon round Cota. I was like, oh, it must be.
And that would be a very Bottas thing to do.
It really would be, yeah. He probably has loads of, records.
All right. Come on then, Baxter. Question two.
In Austin, which team are using recycled carbon fiber on their cockpit panels? Is it A, Williams?
They don't have the tech.
B, Alpine? C, McLaren?
Oof. I read about this, but I can't remember the team. Fuck. Williams, Alpine, or McLaren? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Oh,
you're
joking.
You're like listening in to the movement.
Yeah, the movements. He's written D.
Right. Reveal in 3, 2, 1.
Boom. I've gone C.
Oh, we've both gone C.
We've done the same.
Chaps, you are both correct.
Yes. Come on.
Recycled.
Did you just guess that?
Facts, yeah.
So recycled carbon fiber still offers up to 85% of carbon fiber's original strength.
Love that. Yes. Okay. McLaren. That's good for McLaren. I like that.
Yeah, I like that. There's a lot of waste.
You know what it was? My logic for that was like McLaren.
Yeah, what was your
logic? No, because there was no knowledge. There was absolutely no knowledge whatsoever. It was just kind of like, I don't know, McLaren just do... I feel like McLaren are more like in tune with like modern things.
Well, they've got like the tablet.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like I could just envisage them thinking in a board meeting randomly, oh, fuck it, should we do that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And everyone's so wasteful because you feel like
almost every part is like made by hand as well.
Yeah.
Which you probably see it on these cars because they're all like, I like that. Mm. I don't know about you boys. I quite like that you see all the patches on the cars where it's all that repurposed.
It's like saw put together.
Yeah. Well,
that's nice.
That's like classic throwback. All right, come on then, Cam. So one all.
Go on then. How many podiums has Fernando Alonso gotten this year?
Ooh.
A.
Shit, this requires memory.
5. B. 7. C. 9.
Podiums this season.
That is what I said, Niren.
Shit, I just had to clarify my memory.
I'll read it again. How many podiums has Fernando Alonso got so far this season? Is it A. 5, B. 7, and C. 9? Or C9.
About to have my channel terminated for getting this wrong, because
it's a bit techie though.
I shouldn't, but I'm pretty sure it's not one of them, but I'm not sure between the other two.
A bit techie.
Honestly, mate, the problem with this question is it relies on remembering things that happened a long time ago, because that's the mind I haven't been very good recently.
Sorry, just to reiterate the question, this season.
Oh, yeah. No, of course, but this is for like 3 months.
You overestimate my memory, Cameron.
Yeah.
Severely overestimate my memory. All right.
I remember what I did yesterday, let alone.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, B.
Gosh. Oh, I did A. I went
You've
A.
gone A.
Mm.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not A.
Good man, Tomo.
I'm very sure it's not A.
Good man, Tomo. The answer is B. So.
Yeah. Come on! I can't believe this.
Good man.
I can't believe this. Getting lucky every single round wasn't sustainable. What the fuck? Back.
Go on, then, chaps. Well, are we with 2-1? 2-1?
2-1.
Yeah, 2-1 to Tomo. Yeah.
Mate, you've nailed it. Unless you want to do the tiebreaker regardless.
Yeah, should we just do the tiebreaker?
Let's do the tiebreaker for vibes.
Winner takes all. What? No, but what if I get the tiebreaker right and then it's
then
tied?
Well done.
Yeah. but it's a draw.
No.
All right. So this is a whoever is closest wins.
Oh, I like these ones. Okay.
How many points does Oscar Piastri currently have?
I should know this. I do these graphics for like every race.
Yeah,
he didn't score in Austin.
He didn't score today, no.
Niren is such a professional copycat at school.
I'm listening right now.
Teasing out.
Right, it's two digits.
I think it's this. Okay. Should we reveal our answers?
Yeah. In three. Oh, I've just realised. Oh, yeah.
What?
No,
it's
fine.
Change it.
Sure?
No.
Sure. Yeah.
You sure? 3, 2, 1. I've said 46.
I said 57.
Oh my God.
Now I wrote 47 and I wiped out the 7 and wrote 6 instead.
You're both quite heavily wrong, but Niren is closer. It's 83.
83?
That's chaos, isn't it?
Because there's been this whole discourse about Oscar getting close to Lewis's tally from 07, even though different points.
Oh, different points scheduled.
Because
I knew it was more because I realised that I'd seen that sort of number like 2 races ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, obviously it's not going to be that now.
What?
He scored points in like Japan. Yeah.
That's
poor from you, though. I'm not going to lie. I think I win, to be honest with you, the whole thing. I'm not going to lie. I might have to take the crown again.
Hold that. I was so sure that I was like really close.
83.
I thought it would have been less. I thought it would have been there.
I thought it was, I thought it was 50s or 60s.
Because
I did 83. Hey, that's actually strong from him. He must be like quite close to, actually no, I was about to say he's close to George Russell, but I think George Russell's scored over 100 now.
So you're tired?
I don't know how I'm going to recover from this.
Bloody no, man.
It's all right.
You know, yeah. Channel like,
termination,
like,
email.
I think you deserve to win that.
No,
that,
I don't.
I was I really so... Don't. I was so, like, I'm sure he had 46 points at some point this season.
He probably did.
I've got like a Photoshop graphic like in my head where he's behind still the 2 Alpines, which he obviously isn't.
Mate.
Well, I think we call that a draw personally, not going to lie.
Oscar, I know you were sat over there doing fellas ago.
Yeah. We're sorry.
I'm truly sorry.
We apologise. Good stuff, everyone.
Talking of going back to the old days, the days before sprints, because we have, fortunately, we've had a really good race on the Sunday. I think we all enjoyed that, right? There was a lot to think about. It was the polar opposite of what we got from the same 20 cars on the same track for 19 instead of 56 laps, the sprint. My goodness, that was an absolute fucking stinker, boys. And quali was decent. The top four within a tenth. The sprint stinks.
I saw a contrast. It was Jarno Otmir. He posted like a contrast in it. He was him tweeting that the gap in the sprint was like 30 seconds. And just between above the top six. The top six. It was 30 seconds. And just above it was Matt Gallagher saying like, oh my God, yes, qualifying a tenth. But the algorithm had put them right next to each other. And the contrast was just incredible. That like the
For You page
that we had in qualifying.
Coming through.
Sprints are techie. They are techie, but I think they get a bad rap, you know, chaps.
I agree. Yeah, I say.
Races, sprint, or otherwise are always good. There's seasonal variance in there, isn't there? Sometimes you're just going to have a shit.
Let me argue that the race was really good.
But why was the race good, Tommy?
Well, because there was variety of... We didn't get that variety of pace in the sprint. It was...
I'd argue that the reason why the race was good is
because Max started sixth.
Correct. So if you had the same starting grid for the sprint race, the sprint race would have been sick. Just like was it Baku when Max was out of position for the sprint, and then you've all of a sudden, rather than okay, I can go away for 20 laps because I know Max Verstappen's going to win.
Yeah,
you're glued because there is uncertainty baked into the outcome. I think it's just the circumstance around.
What do you think, Tommy?
The sprint was interesting for about three laps because Lewis was just sticking to Max, and I'm thinking, oh, we got a 21 rematch here. This is great. And then Max just dunked 8 seconds on him in about 10 laps, and it was just like great,
sick,
great. I think they're not maximizing the potential of the sprint. I think it could work. These drivers have all come through junior formula. So why not do what the junior formula do? So you do your qualifying and then reverse the top 10 potentially. F2 style. Or you could stick with what you're doing right now, separating everything. And my idea for this would be do Formula E style knockout quali on the Saturday. Just go full chaos and just do the pursuit style top 8. And see what happens and put the pressure on the drivers so it becomes more of an event rather than just here's another sprint quali where you have to use the same set of tires and here's a sprint race, but you're actually baking in drama into it as well.
Just
because that's what they want. They want entertainment. It doesn't getting it.
It still doesn't feel like, because I, from an entertainment perspective, again, like you said, like you get shit races,
100,
whether they're long or short, it happens. Like that's just
always have, always will.
Yeah, there's just some situations and scenarios where you're going to get someone who drives away at the front, and no one else is particularly feeling that chaotic that day. So it's all quite calm. But you know, from an actual end, like we've just come off the back of the Qatar sprint, which was fucking amazing.
Yeah,
you know, so and I know that like a little bit of recency bias can creep into it. But my main problem is not the actual entertainment value that we get across a season with sprints. It is just the fact that it just kind of feels like, right, cool, here's like a short, here's the Sunday light version. Here's Sunday zero.
It's just
everything's like slightly shorter. It's like if you really want it to stand out as a concept and as something that's going to add to a season, like it needs to be some kind of event. It needs to have something that's genuinely very different.
Yeah.
And you look at it and go, oh, cool, this is going to be different to the normal weekend. It's not just like here's an extra 15 laps of race.
I hear you, brother. It does feel like a bit of a cash grab. More content, more money for, do you know what I mean? For all content.
And not that much like effort in terms of like planning 100%. How that's going to look.
And also they changed the track limits as well.
That bomb.
They painted the lines on turn 19 where Max went off on Friday, and then all of a sudden they've got more room because the teams are like, oh no, that's a bit too harsh. You're like, you can't do that in the middle of a weekend unless Pirelli are going.
So stupid.
It's a bit dodgy, ad hoc, isn't it? Freestyling. M&M 8 Mile.
Yeah.
I'd say about the sprint race though, it's very, I'm going to commend for once in my life the FIA, right? Because sometimes you got to roll the dice, like do something in the format. And I don't think the sprint race is in its final format. Okay, so they tinkered around with the shootout and the names, like that. Do you know what I mean? It's not quite there yet, and maybe they do need to play with a reverse grid. Good luck getting that by the drivers.
Oh, it would never happen.
The drivers would like it.
Yeah. Carlos Sainz has gone on record. He said like he endorses
not the
diehard.
Lewis and Alonso and Max, they're not having that.
Charlotte guys against us.
They're not the diehard ones up front. Lewis was like, what, reverse grid? What?
Yeah,
Lewis is old school, isn't he?
I think most of the top four or five.
I reckon the young...
They're not having that.
It really depends who you are. You know, if you're an Alpine,
exactly.
But then it comes to the broad question, should the drivers and teams have a, you know, should they have a voice in that kind of decision?
Well, they're always going to. This is like Andretti Global coming in, right? You're always going to have, they need to act in unison, do the FIA and FOM.
Mm.
Yeah. And because of that, the drivers and the teams are always going to have, they're always going to have like a veto. They're like, well, no, I don't fancy this. I don't fancy this.
But and again, should you know, for the good of the sport more, these decisions should be made. And again, there's a variety of opinion amongst drivers. There's a variety of opinion amongst teams about Andretti and blah, blah, blah. And then it comes to a more general question. Should these, you know, these drivers and these team principals and personnels, they will come and they will go. They will move on. Like they're part of the sport for a fleeting period, and then they will move on. And that's just how it works. They won't be drivers and team principals forever. But I just think that, you know, the sprint, I think if the overall product improves, like it's more competitive, then the sprint will generally be more competitive. But I think that the standing issue is completely like, it doesn't feel different and distinct enough. Reverse grids would do that. Is there anything, because I feel like reverse grids, and I mean, I've asked this question before, and it's like, people say, oh, just get rid of the sprints. Like, the sprints aren't going anywhere.
No. Might as well just try and make them better.
Like, as a racing purist, yeah, I would prefer an F1 selfishly without sprints? Yes, I like Friday practice and all that. But that's not going to happen. So I'm not even going to bother. Like, we have to try and make the best of it, because commercially, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So how do you make it feel more distinct?
I find it interesting that like other series have kind of just nabbed the idea and gone, fuck it, we'll do that as well.
Sprints.
MotoGP do it as well.
Yeah,
I think they do it every weekend.
It's compulsory, yeah.
It feels like, to Tomo's point, it does feel like, particularly this weekend, felt like a bloody interruption. Like they're not normally the like race weekend builds to this crit. Like you got
a bit of a spoiler as well.
Yeah, true also, but it builds to this crescendo and then you get the outcome of the race, right? And then in the middle of it, you've just got this bloody inconvenience. I'm just like, mate, just get me the ride. I just want to watch the ride. I've seen qualifying. And maybe that's me being a grey beard and not being very, not leaning into the change, right?
Well, there's also a danger of sprint races that we've seen two teams this weekend come with major upgrades and they've just not got on top of them because they only had one free practice. It was Aston and Haas. You know, all four of their cars started in the pit lane because they were just like, we can't do it. So they took the pain. Aston actually did pretty well today, given the circumstances. But you know, it just means that you got teams that could be potentially disadvantaged for the entire weekend, particularly Aston, who had no running in free practice. So they were completely disadvantaged from the start of the weekend, using a new part that they had no idea how to use. And then they've only got one practice session to run it, and then they're under Parc Fermé, which compromised them massively for the sprint yesterday as well.
My one point to that, McLaren bought their first big upgrade in Austria at a sprint weekend with Lando Norris.
It can work, yeah, of course. I mean, Mercedes this weekend as well.
And obviously Lance didn't get running because they had a brake issue.
Yeah.
Fernando had a similar brake issue. I don't know. I think that... I don't see sprints, well, maybe they will take over and be. And you know, I think sprints, they give more value, more of a value product proposition to the fans. Like, I mean, when I went to Austria, you know, I went on the Friday, saw some qualifying, went on the Saturday, saw a race, came back here, did the last lap from here. I didn't feel like I missed it because I saw a race in person. It was a really good race as well. In the rain when Max squeezed, well, Checo squeezed Max and then Max squeezed Checo back into turn three. And it was like, you know,
that was a good sprint.
That was and I think there's a lot to be said for that. Like the there are clear positives. Like I think it gives more value for money to the people who are there.
Yeah,
it gets more overall eyeballs, and unfortunately, people will miss out because they work on Fridays, and I understand that you're going to miss out on qualifying. But F1's going to chase that overall numbers, and it's just like, I just want to make it as good as it can be because it's not going anywhere.
I think there's been enough weekends where rather than being an interruption, which it definitely was this week, it was a bit sort of like, because I was quite busy this weekend as well, I was like, fucking hell, there's a race going on. But I think there's been enough examples in the sprint's history, like Brazil last year, Austria this year, Qatar this year as well, where it's genuinely like added something to the weekend, where we can go, okay, you know what, actually, that made sense. It was worthwhile it being.
All right, so how do we fix it? So reverse grids, that's one. What else?
Track selection. Like, you got to get the right tracks. Like, Austria, great. Brazil, great. Qatar, okay, we can keep going there. Baku, why did we do a sprint there? Like, that was just...
What makes a good sprint track, do you think?
Very good bloody question.
Yeah. I mean,
first of all, overtaking opportunities.
Overtaking opportunities is massive.
The clearest thing in terms of, like, it can't be a track where you're going to run behind
Monaco
14 laps. You only got 15.
Yeah.
Monaco sprint.
Yeah, Monaco sprint would be a disaster. Well,
the worst. I think they just boycott, to be honest.
I also think the short, some of those where you've got quicker lap times as well. Austria and Brazil, case in point, you got these shorter tracks where you can maybe do a slightly longer race because you're running to a set distance. So it gives the drivers just a bit more time just to try and plan their moves more effectively.
You know what's good as well is there's that nice little crossover in terms of like what tire to use as well. A couple, like a few people, obviously science doing softs this weekend made no sense. But where you've got like a little bit of a, and I suppose that also, that's probably kind of the decision there is almost how many laps the sprint needs to be as well, rather than just what the track is. But
that's a good point.
When there's
point,
a bit of a crossover, it's pretty good. Because you have soft runners starting quick and then coming back down.
Absolutely.
It's variables that breathe life to Jeopardy, right? So even like when bloody last race that there was all that stuff around the tires blowing up and whatever. Mm-hmm. People were tuning in because they were like, it was bonkers and it absolutely brings the sport into disrepute. But there's a morbid reality that makes people tune in. They want to see.
We love the
Jeopardy.
Is this 2005 Indianapolis? I'm going to watch this because I want to see how they're going to fix it. There's dramas in there. Mm-hmm. So I just, to your question, Tom, I think variables, tracks that they've taken off Silverstone, which one of those tracks on the calendar currently speaks better to sprint format than bloody Silverstone?
Classic.
Nice and wide. No longer is are the cars too big and bloody cumbersome to overtake. Yeah. Put Silverstone on there. And I think, like, have a look at the Parc Fermé rules. I don't hate Parc Fermé because I think a team like Red Bull, as an example, benefit massively from the pre-practice 1, 2, and 3 to set up their quite... their diva characteristic. I think certain quads require a bit of setup time, but maybe sack off.
Loosening Parc Fermé after the sprint at least gives you a chance to see something different. Because you know the cars that are going into that sprint are identical pretty much, apart from a bit of front rear wing maybe, to the cars that are going into the
I think that's the right call, because then you don't have four cars starting in the pit lane and it means that people can tinker things and get the car to where they want it to
be. You might just get a slightly different, say maybe instead of the Haas being quicker than the AlphaTauri, it's the other way around.
I've got something.
Go on.
Let's go.
I want ideas. I don't just want complaining. I want ideas.
Sprinklers on
I've
the track.
I've got something.
Go on.
You spoke earlier about you didn't speak earlier. I saw a tweet about it and you said like mandating a one stop, right?
I asked the question,
whether that could be something.
Such a good idea as well.
Which I think it would.
Yeah,
we could mandate pit stops or we could mandate rain. Let's just go into places where it rains all the time, bro.
Mandate rain.
I'm not having a sprint in Saudi Arabia. There's no chance.
Called it,
bro.
Sprinklers.
Only
right, Bernie.
Sprints where there's a 75% chance. We'll just check the weather forecast beforehand. And if there's going to be a lot of a chance of rain, then we'll go, okay, right, we'll do a sprint there.
Yeah. So I put that out, right? I was like, mandating a one stop, right? And people were like, it won't feel different. But like, it doesn't feel different anyway. Yeah. Like, it just feels like they're just doing the first stint of a race and then they're just packing it in. Yeah. Just mandate, because at least it gives a chance to someone to fuck up a pit stop or to do a really good pit stop and jump someone in the pits or something. I don't know. And maybe, obviously, then you're looking at tire allocation and maybe...
With that, brother, is that then it's long then. Because you need to do two stints. It doesn't...
How much longer is it? It adds 20 seconds. And then also you're going quicker on the second stint.
It adds the second stint, and that's long. That doesn't then fit the... This is meant to be a... sprint race is meant to be a condensed format.
Yeah.
like a
mandate two stops for the race and one stop for the sprint. Bosh, done, sorted. And one shot for qualifying. Make it different. Make it feel different.
Quality would be like, sick.
The only reason, right? It was very easy to. Well, no, even today, I was like, well, hang on, who was on pole? Oh no, it was Shaw, wasn't it? Because I couldn't even remember who was second because Max put it on pole, and it's exactly the same fucking thing. Like, it's a little bit shorter, but like barely. Yeah. It doesn't make it feel different. Yeah,
sprint qualifying being the exact same as normal qualifying, but just a bit shorter, is my least favorite thing about all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just, because literally forget the order. It's like, I can't actually, like, when I get, if I get to like, I suppose, yeah. If it gets like a Saturday afternoon, I'm ready to watch the sprint or whatever. I don't even know what the fucking order was because we've already had two qualifying sessions already and exactly. I can't remember who's where.
Conflating issues. Oh, we're not arguing against chaps, but you lot are just slandering the sprint qualifiers, the sprint format too. They're too hard.
Fundamentally, I don't have an issue.
Le Mans start.
What do you mean to her?
Fuck, no, I don't. But this is not the format for it.
Le Mans start.
Lewis, play back
they
the
have to run to the car at the start of the race.
Sprint to the car.
They have to run to the car at the start of the race. All Le Mans.
Yeah, well, they said you got to be able to get out in what 7 seconds. Yeah, so
get in 7 seconds as well.
Always a chaos merchant.
Look, sprints aren't going anywhere, so there's no point complaining, being like, get rid of the sprints. It's not going to achieve anything. We need to try and make it as good as it can be. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've seen good sprints, and we've seen, and hopefully as the sport condenses. Go on, Cam. I'll let you have the last one.
I think we're starting to sound like Drive to Survivors chaps, that we want action and blood and guts every single sprint race. And it's just the nature of F1 is that you're going to get seasonal variances there, as you will with the actual race. Just the same way with the sprints, you'll have fantastic ones that are incredible. Max Verstappen coming from the back, working his way through the pack, blood and guts, lots of overtaking. But then you're going to have stinkers like we did this weekend. And in the words of Karun Chandhok, if you don't like it, go and watch another sport. Don't do that. Please don't actually do that.
That's
outrageous of him to say that. Wow. Or people.
Yeah.
He
you know what? I gave Cam last word and I'm going to let him have it. Boys, thank you very much for joining us today for the Last Lap podcast. Again, where can the people find you, Cameron, first of all?
CameronF1YT on Twitter and CameronF1 on the YouTubes.
Baxter?
BaxterBF1 on YouTube, BaxterB on Twitter, and also on The Shakedown with this guy as well.
This is true. That push. Decent podcast, talking all sorts of rubbish and nonsense and F1 stuff.
Love it, boys. All good, now.
Yeah, well,
it's a rabbit, boy.
Yeah, come on, man.
Mexico next weekend.
Yeah, have indeed got Mexico. A little bit of a bag.
Another evening shift for us.
It is. Yeah, I like the evening one.
Yeah, I do actually.
Chill out a little bit. Just kind of relax for the day and then boom, we're in it. We're here.
Bosh.
Late evening. We'll get the drinks in next time.
Bosh, absolutely. Don't forget.
To, you know, commemorate.
Shall we? Okay.
We're in Mexico.
Okay.
Not
the biggest fan, but I'll give it.
I hate it.
We'll give it a go.
For the people.
Don't forget, like, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, 5 stars, Apple Podcasts.
Indeed.
MySpace, Pixo, ratemypoo.com.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
On the back of Charles Leclerc's pole conversion record.
Slander.
Sorry.
And we will see you next weekend.
Indeed.
This weekend coming up.
Yes.
The Mexico Grand Prix, live on Sunday for the race, 8 p.m. UK time. It kicks off. We'll be starting at 7:30 and then next Tuesday, 6 p.m. for the podcast.
Tantalizing.
Hopefully it's a banger. Come on, Checo. Checo's going to win in Mexico.
He's going to do it. He's
Lock
do
it,
it
in. Lock it in.
Vamos, Checo. Vamos.
After all the slander.
Viva la raza.
Bye-bye.